And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I hope it's a wake-up call to Putin, and I hope to some extent it's a wake-up call to us. I have said before, and I really believe it, we will fight them now or we will fight them later. It's only a question of time. They're now in 12 countries. They've done 25 major attacks in these countries outside of Syria and Iraq in the last 2 years. This is a huge worldwide problem, and we've got to play a major role. The Russians should as well.
Well, as they say, even a stopped clock is right twice a day, and I guess they've adjusted or titrated Feinstein's medication, because here she is, the head of the most important Senate committee, finally awakening to the fact that ISIS is a threat to our survival. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Now, instead of talking about the existential threat of these Islamo-fascists to our survival, instead we hear about a group of football players who force a college president to resign for kind of very vague reasons, frankly. Now, I never heard of anything like this. They force the president of the University of Missouri, Tom Wolf, they fire him in essence, because he didn't handle student complaints about race properly. Now, I don't have any idea why he would resign. He wasn't responsible for any of these things. And I read their list of demands, you see. The list of demands are identical to that of the Black Panthers of the 1960s. The same fist in the air, the same demand for more minorities, the same old, same old, same old. I have a question. Why weren't the football players suspended who threatened not to play? It's that simple. Suspend them. So I realize that universities today are more about sports than they are about academia. That I get. And that sports bring them a lot of money. I get that as well. And it's all about money. And so that's why you have an upside-down, topsy-turvy world. This is the Savage Nation. Welcome to me back. And I'm glad to be back. I took a few days last week for personal reasons after a very intense launch of Government Zero, which, thanks to you, made it to number 3 on the New York Times bestseller list. And I want to thank you for that. And I want to say something else to you about ISIS. There is a dance of death in the West and actual death in the Middle East, courtesy of the Islamo-fascists. Meanwhile, the Caesar in the White House entertains himself with 1,000 sycophants, partying on behind closed doors, as if the Islamo-fascist hand will not touch him. He thinks he's protected from this new plague, the Black Death of radical Islam. But we're facing something the West hasn't had to deal with since the wars of religion in the 16th and 17th centuries. You see, when those religious wars ended in one place, they began in another, and they lasted for over 100 years. The same thing is happening right now. The radical Muslims are on the warpath, and they are against everyone else. They are against Muslims who are not as fanatical. They are against the members of all other religions. They think they are going to take us back to some pristine religious period in human history that never actually occurred. It's all complete garbage. These faith warriors live lower than the pigs they despise. They kidnap and rape 8-year-old girls and say the Quran authorizes it. They're not purists. They're killers. They're psychopathic Nazis in headscarves. They aren't leading a religious revival. They're trying to take us back to a state of barbarism that has been extinct for 1,200 years. This is a barbaric revolution, and we have a man in the White House who denies its existence. But whether he chooses to acknowledge it or not, it's going to continue until someone puts a stop to it. And let us hope that that is Vladimir Putin of Russia, who even Dianne Feinstein says we must cooperate with. Can you imagine that we have such a fool in the White House? That even a liberal senator from California has to say, hey, wait a minute, this is serious business here. It's been said that the fight against radical Islam is the defining conflict of the next generation. He likened radical Islam to a starfish. When you cut off a spider's head, it dies. But when you cut off the leg of a starfish, the starfish can regenerate it. Radical political Islam is a starfish. If you defeat ISIS or Al-Qaeda, they will merely come back under another name. Why would any government bring in unvetted Muslim immigrants at a time like this? It would seem that only an insane prince would do this to his own country. But Obama is not insane. He's stoned on the orthodoxy of the progressive left. Obama and his supporters are drunk on their ideology. They think they're going to create a progressive utopia by continuing their attack on all Western values. This is precisely how great civilizations of the past declined and eventually fell. They rejected the values that made them great and degenerated into narcissism and selfishness. They kept on partying until they were too weak to defend themselves. Then the unthinkable happened. They fell. That's the opening page to Government Zero. Now you know why it's a bestseller. It's the most important book of our generation. The phone number is 855-407-282. Now let's go back to the hatred in the United States of America. As I said before, University of Missouri president is forced to resign, allegedly over some complaints that football players had. Well, I want to read you what a black sportscaster had to say today on ESPN2. Co-host Stephen A. Smith reacted to the news of the University of Missouri president, Tim Wolf, being forced to resign amid racial tension and protests on campus. Mr. Smith first said that Wolf had to go due to the black football players skipping out on football activities until he steps down. I disagree, by the way. I would have dismissed the football players and suspended football. And remember what the mission of a university is. It's not football. It's learning. But nevertheless, he later added that, quote, everyone who is white is not racist. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. Warning black America, he did, that just because someone with different pigmentation disagrees with them does not make them racist. He continued, and remember, he is African American. To white Americans out there, accept the reality that to some level racism exists. It's inescapable. It's a reality, Smith said. But to black America, let me make this statement. Everyone who is white is not racist. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. And it's important to point out that because with this particular incident, it was warranted. But that doesn't mean we turn around and the second somebody disagrees with us of a different hue, pigmentation, culture, etc. The second somebody might be oblivious or ignorant to what we are, what we believe, what we feel, doesn't make them racist. Just like folks have an obligation to get whatever racist tendencies may be inside their bones, we have an obligation to appreciate there are a lot of people in this God-fearing country that we live in who are not racist. Don't be so quick to jump, he cautioned. And that opens the show on the Savage Nation. Phone number here is 855-400-7282. Now they're demanding, I'll read you the demand list. You won't believe the Missouri protest. It's right out of the 1960s, the same garbage that Huey Newton and the Black Panthers imposed upon America and got nowhere. It led them nowhere. It's a dead end. It got them nowhere. When I read you the list of demands issued to the university by the subliterates, you'll see that we've gone back 50 years as a result of the president's, I would say, very subtle racism that he has provoked in this nation. And I say again, if these football players are so sensitive to issues, I ask you, don't you think the university should have said to them, we are addressing these issues, but if you continue to protest and you continue to sit in or whatever you're going to do, we're going to dismiss you from the university until you come back. This is not about you. This is about us. We run the university, not you. Football players are not known for their brains. Let's be clear. They're known for their brawn. Why in the world would an entire university kowtow to a group of athletes who are not known for their brains when it is supposed to be an institution of higher learning, not football playing? That's the opening to the show. And now I'll read you some of the demands of the, what group is this now? It's racial turmoil. Oh, Concerned Student 1950. And they issued the demands to the university last month. One, we demand that the University of Missouri system president Tim Wolf writes a handwritten apology to the Concerned Student 1950 demonstrators and holds a press conference in the Mizzou Student Center reading a letter. This is right out of communist China, by the way, where they forced people who were not compliant with communism to admit their wrongdoing and stand and be ashamed in the streets. This is straight out communism. It's a disaster. In the letter and at the press conference, they say, Tim Wolf must acknowledge his white male privilege, recognize the systems of oppression exist, and provide a verbal commitment to fulfilling Concerned Student 1950 demands. We want Tim Wolf to admit to his gross negligence, allowing his driver to hit one of the demonstrators, yeah, right, consenting to the physical violence of bystanders,
and lastly refusing to intervene when Columbia Police Department used excessive force with demonstrators. All right, I don't even want to read anymore. You get the picture. You get the picture. The thugs are now running the university. Period. End of story. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it because I put up with this my whole life. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that these football players did the right thing by forcing a university president out? Or do you feel, as I do, that they should have been told that they will be thrown out of the university if they don't, well, let's say, do their job? It's that simple. If you don't do your job, or you want to protest, good for you. We live in a free country. But you don't demand that the president resign, do you? What did he have to do with their complaints? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. How do you feel about this? Now, there's another topic that I think is far more serious than that, which was the ISIS issue, as I read to you in Government Zero, and I hope you'll pay attention and sort of not lose the big picture, the big game. The big game is the big war. The big game is the war against Islamofascism that they have inflicted upon us. The big game out there is the one that Russia is fighting and that Obama is feigning. That's the big war. But we'll talk about the little wars here in America, conducted by the illegitimate radical left, in order to, A, weaken us, and B, distract us from the real enemies, not only within, but without. I saw another story this weekend that attracted my eye, and I don't want to give too much of it in the first 10 minutes of the show, but that's what I normally do. I do more in 10 minutes than you'd expect. There was a thermonuclear missile launch near Los Angeles over the weekend. We do not know if that missile contained a nuclear weapon or not. We don't know where it went. But there's a big question. Viewers across California and parts of the West Coast reported seeing a very strange, very large flash of light across the Pacific Ocean Saturday night, and then they were told the U.S. Navy was conducting a missile test. Now, here's the question to the American audience and to the world. You mean in the entire Pacific Ocean, one of our submarines, the USS Kentucky, an Ohio-class SSBN, could not have launched the missile in the middle of the ocean? Why did they have to launch it off the coast of California and alter flight paths at LAX? Why did they do that? Why wasn't the entire Pacific Ocean good enough for such a test launch? Why did the U.S. military, meaning Barry Obama and the sorority, choose to launch such a test right off the coast of California? I'll tell you what I think is going on the minute I return right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It's Monday. You know, there's a lot of real topics out there. We're being distracted by the stupidity of the football players in Missouri. But you look at the big picture. You look at the ISIS war against the world. And we're not hearing a word about it from Caesar in the White House. And then you ask yourself, what the heck is going on that the U.S. Navy would conduct a test of this magnitude, firing a missile from a Trident submarine, USS Kentucky, an Ohio-class SSBN, off the coast of Southern California? Why would they launch from the West Coast, forcing airplanes to divert, freaking out, I don't know, millions of people on the West Coast who saw a strange large flash of light across the ocean Saturday night? Why did the U.S. Navy test so close to our shore? Well, I have the answer. As usual, Michael Savage is the answer man. You want to hear the answer? I'll give you the answer, because you see, China has, with American technology, stolen technology, technology given to them by Democrat donors going all the way back to the Clinton era, been rapidly developing not only their Navy, but their ability to launch nuclear missiles at the United States of America from the homeland of China. Unfortunately for the Chinese, they have only a range of 1,500 miles. And so the United States had to show China that although they are certainly capable of annihilating a city or a nation, they cannot reach the United States of America from China with a missile launch. But we can reach them with a missile launch. And if you think Obama is making the world a safer place, I disagree with you totally.
I disagree with you totally. This lunatic in the White House has damaged relations with Russia, creating a new Cold War with Russia. Now the girls who are running his show are now threatening and saber-rattling against China, saying, you know what, you can only launch 1,500 miles from China. We can launch, I think it's, what, 4,000-mile range? I have no idea what the range is from the United States. But you see, with our submarines, the fact of the matter is we can launch from anywhere. They have many submarines, but I don't know that they have, I do not know if they have ballistic submarines. The point is, this is insanity. This is insanity. China is building a modern and regionally powerful navy with limited but tremendously growing capability for conducting operations beyond China's region near their own shores. And they have a broad array of platform and weapon acquisition programs, which they've gotten by stealing from the United States, buying from Iran and North Korea, including anti-ship ballistic missiles, anti-ship cruise missiles, submarines, surface ships, aircraft. I know this is frightening, and many of you don't want to hear this. You'd rather think about what some a group of ball players have to say in Missouri, or what the moron Bernie Sanders, the street peddler, the pickle salesman from Ludlow Street, has to say about politics. But to me, the national security is the number one issue. And this player in the White House is not playing the game very well. He's put us at a tremendous disadvantage. And just before this missile test on Saturday night off the coast of L.A., this strange story came out. The weakling defense secretary, the one who speaks by shaking with a pink tie, threatened China and Russia. That's right, you heard me. The weakling pink-tied defense secretary, Ashlyn Carter, who has been rushing as quickly as he can to denigrate our military, said that Russia and China are potentially threatening the global order. What in the world is this administration doing? I know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. That's what they're doing.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, plan to sleep all day.
See, I think that the Missouri protesters should next demand that no tests be permitted for football players. Because there's no doubt some racism involved in any kind of testing. And so I think it's important that they get rid of all tests for football players so that they can all get straight A's and then go from there to, let's say, a medical school or a law school. And then, of course, they should eliminate the LSATs and the MCATs because those are also racist. And then anyone could be a doctor or a lawyer because you don't want to discriminate against anybody who may not be able to pass the LCAT, whatever the test is to get into law school, or the MCATs. And I think eliminating standardized testing should be one of the demands of those in Missouri. If you look at their other demands, they're not too far away from the following, which I'm about to read to you out of New York City. A principal, that's of course an oxymoron in New York City's public schools, a school principal has just said that standardized testing is modern-day slavery. I'm not making it up. In an online rant, a Bronx public school principal has likened standardized testing to slavery, redlining, and crack cocaine and damaging the lives of minorities. And here's what the genius wrote. Public school high-stakes standardized testing is a form of modern-day slavery, and it is designed to continue the proliferation of inequality. Cornerstone Academy for Social Action Middle School Principal Jamal Bowman said in an August 31 blog entry titled The Tyranny of Standardized Testing. And I'll go on because the man is so smart that even Larry David should pay attention to this. Robert De Niro should seek this man out and see if they can put him in a movie as an example of a brilliant American. He went on, this genius who said that testing is the equivalent of slavery. He went on and said, America was born of horror for black people, and that horror continues today for brown and poor people as well. Slavery, Jim Crow, redlining, crack cocaine, and now standardized testing were all sanctioned by the American government, all designed to destroy the mind, body, and soul of black and brown people. The principal blamed the U.S. government for perpetuating a, quote, legacy of oppression, with the Obama administration adopting the Race to the Top program that prodded states to use student exam results
to evaluate teachers and promote charter schools. He went on. From the Continental Congress to Race to the Top, America has a tradition of disenfranchising the masses. The founding principal of the Eastchester Middle School, Principal Bowman, has emerged as an outspoken critic. Okay, I can read on and on. But former U.S. Education Secretary Ron Page, who grew up in segregated Mississippi and, like Bowman, is black, said it was wrong to inject slavery into the discussion. Rod Page said this, "I disagree with him completely. I'm disappointed the discussion is turning ugly. We're better people than that." Can you believe this? That this is what's going on, that tests themselves are now considered racist? Where is it going to end? I'll tell you where it ends, because I've studied in great detail. It ends the way communist China ended when Mao Zedong conducted the Cultural Revolution. They took illiterate girls from illiterate peasant girls from the country, and they put them into hospitals, and they said to the illiterate girls, "You are now a doctor." And if the girl said, "I don't know how to be a doctor," they called her a counter-revolutionary, and they punished her, sometimes very severely. And then they took the surgeons and the doctors in the Chinese hospitals, and they called them bourgeois reactionaries, and they forced them to work in the laundries of the hospitals. This is where America is going under Mao Tse Obama, who I called pleasantly Mao Obama about 2 years ago. So that's one story. I mean, there are others. There's plenty of other stuff. The big thing is the missile test. I have a question for my audience. We're almost near the Thanksgiving mark already. It's the 9th of November. What is it, 2-3 weeks now? I can't believe how quick the year has gone. What passage from Government Zero do you intend to read to your family over Thanksgiving? I know it's a loaded question. I get it. And I could just imagine that many of you, you know, how, you know, you're buying the book in droves. You probably are dying to quote something from the book to some liberal relative. I mean, everyone in the world has a Bernie Sanders in the family. Everyone in the world has a Larry David in the family, especially if you're from New York. Everybody knows the type. They grab your lapel. They poke you in the chest with their finger as they spritz you with too much saliva, and they tell you how great socialism is. They spritz you with their saliva while telling you about income inequality. Meanwhile, they came to your house in either a Lexus or a Mercedes. You get the picture. You know how it works. And is there a passage from Government Zero that you'd like to read to the Bernie in your family? I'd like to know what it might be. Now let's go back to some of the news talk on the Savage Nation. WDRC Radio. I guess Bill is not there. Bill, you're going to try again. Bill is gone. That's a good one. First call of dead. No one responds to. We'll try the next one. KKOH, Reno, Dale, you're the next up. Let's hope you're there. Go ahead, Dale.
Yes, I'm here. What I wanted to get in touch with you about was, I come from a mix. First, I'm a veteran, so thank you for taking care of the veterans and doing all you do. But I come from a mixed race family. Nephews are half black and half white, as well as half Latino and half white. Nieces, and I've been teaching them that even though, you know, the whole society's changed and come around, that they're going to have to work a little bit harder than everybody else, because people have a perception, and for a lot of people, perception is reality. So when they see it, and I hear about stuff happening at schools and people demanding stuff, you know, it makes me think.
Wait, you say people have perceptions. What perceptions do you mean people have?
Well, people assume there's all kinds of racial things, like black people are lazy, you know, things like that. And I tell them that these are perceptions and stereotypes that people live.
Wait, let's slow down. You mean all white people think that all people of color are lazy?
I didn't say that, sir. I said that there's these perceptions out there. Okay? I
can say, and what, are you going to let your whole life stop because of someone's viewpoint of you? That's not the right answer. You have to go on with your life as though there are no perceptions about you, and run your own life and not be so overly sensitive to what some person may think about you. I don't understand this. Let me ask you something. Do you think that admitting students to colleges based on their race, not upon their qualifications, has something to do with the perceptions that may exist?
No, I'm on the Chapter 33 voc rehabilitation. I'm a disabled veteran, and I've had to earn everything I've got from the government.
No, I didn't say, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the widespread practice that you know and I know is in place across America, where people of a certain background who do not as well on standardized tests are pushed ahead of others based on their race. Do you think that has created some sort of resentment in this country?
To a point, yes. I mean, you can even go back to the Simon Bennett testing for intelligence in the early 1900s. I mean, you could go back to as far back as that. There's resentment both on both sides. I resent Miss Obama because she got into places based upon her race that some people who probably deserved a lot more of her than her got should be in that place.
But what I'm saying is, of course, in all societies that are multiracial, you're going to have resentment between races. That's a given. But you know it runs in all directions. You admitted that, right?
I concur, yes.
Okay. So how do you live in a multiracial society where there are inherent suspicions and resentments between one race and the other? What do you tell your children? How do you raise them? You tell them to ignore the taunts, ignore this and not fall for the taunts, and just move on with your life. And just do the best you can and prove yourself by doing the best you can. Isn't that the answer?
I tell them to be better than the next guy, and that way you get chosen for things. I don't have any kids, but
that's what I'm saying to you. I don't understand why everyone has to be so concerned about what the other person may think about you or may say about you. Where is the people when no one has any thick skin anymore? Everybody has to be so worried about what someone said or someone did. What kind of world are we living in when people are cutting people's heads off in the Middle East and kidnapping and raping? We're worried about an alleged statement of this, an alleged look like that. What kind of nation have we become?
I couldn't even answer that if you wanted an answer. We've become a nation of lazy people that you'll offend by saying one word or another.
All right, so you agree with me, and I appreciate that. And you're getting a free gift, a Thanksgiving copy of Government Zero. While it does not have a picture of a turkey in a brown hat on it, it has a picture of me with a brown hat on it, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Thank you very much. Don't. By the way, if you put it in the oven, I suggest that you not cook it beyond a certain temperature Fahrenheit. In fact, there was a movie in the 60s based upon a great novel. Does anyone remember the name of it? I'll give you a free book if you do. Who knows the name of that movie and who wrote the book where the title contains the word Fahrenheit in it? I know that there are some literary people listening to the show. And I forget, I really do forget the temperature at which paper burns, but that was the title of the book. And I think it was written by Anthony Burgess, one of the world's great novelists, very well known many decades ago. But now let's not talk about testing missiles off the coast of L.A., freaking out millions of people, that the Girl Scouts in the White House had a little fun over the weekend, and they wanted to show China that we can fire a missile from a submarine off our coast. Do you understand how crazy the people are who are running this country? Do you understand how insane it is to pick a fight with China? Dustin on WMAL, what do you make of the missile test off the coast of Los Angeles that was conducted this week and that freaked out millions of people in Southern California?
Dr. Savage, I think it's actually ridiculous that we are picking a fight that we don't even want to pick a fight with. It's ridiculous. I know you are very punctual. You don't need to say and kiss your rear end and say, oh, you made a great book, because you have. Us as Americans.
Okay, what about firing the missile from the submarine over the weekend that made people think it was a nuclear war? Why do you think this government did that?
You made a very good point earlier whenever you said, I'm going to answer questions because you answer questions. And the question I have to you is easy. Do you think at that point, whenever they fired that missile, they were picking a fight?
I think they were threatening China. I think they were saber-rattling the way fools would saber-rattle with a nuclear submarine. Only a fool would do a thing like this. But let me tell you something. I think China and Russia are preparing a strike against America, but it may be a preemptive strike, an EMP attack, a cyber attack,
currency wars, which China is engaged in today, bandwidth blackouts. By the way, I don't think they have to use nuclear weapons with the incompetent morons running this government. They can wipe us off the planet by crippling us and turning us into absolute slaves by knocking out as I said to you, currency wars alone. Have you seen what China just did over the weekend? Did you see that story on their currency?
I don't believe I have.
Well, here it is, my friends. China announced that they would make the yuan, which is their currency, trade equally, or they would use it in equal trades with the Swiss franc. They're trying to replace the U.S. dollar with their currency because Obama has so debased the U.S. dollar's value that the U.S. dollar is no longer considered a stable currency by others in the world. Do you understand that? No, not really. Here is the headline right here. It's on the Drudge Report. Yuan moves to topple dollar. Yuan moves to topple dollar. Now, to the average person, no one knows what that means. But if you read the business report, it says China to allow direct conversion between their currency, the yuan, and the Swiss franc. What does that actually mean? It means that China took another step to boost the global usage of their paper currency, saying it will start direct trading with the Swiss franc as China pushes its case for reserve currency status at the International Monetary Fund. This is a major story. This is an important step against the United States of America. This shows us how Obama has juggled the books. You know, I don't know how many different ways to say it, but the debt is unsupportable in this country. And everyone in the world knows that the dollar is a bad bet. Yeah, we all love the dollar. You could still buy stuff with it. But this guy has so raised the debt that he's debased the value of the dollar. And there's no better way to show it than the value of real estate in high-end markets such as Los Angeles, New York, Miami, or other areas where people really want to live. That is probably a closer reflection of the actual value of the dollar than is the official valuation of the dollar. So when you see an apartment or a house in San Francisco or New York or Los Angeles raging out of control, you say, what are they, crazy? Who can afford this? Well, there's a lot of foreign buyers who can afford it. And that's because their currency is not pegged to a devalued United States currency. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. The United States is in a soft war with China. Let me be very clear. And the first strike has been launched by China in the currency war, which they initiated by announcing what they announced today about their yuan. They'll soon announce, my estimation is, that their own gold-backed currency is stronger than the worthless paper that the U.S. Treasury keeps printing. What can happen next? With Obama constantly taunting Putin? Who knows? Who knows? A Russian-led severing of undersea fiber optic cables? It's possible. You'd never know about it. It would just that your grid would go out, and they would say it was a glitch. A cyber attack on U.S. infrastructure, including water delivery systems, power grid? Who knows? With the sorority in charge, what might happen? The government lies to you about everything. Let me give you a simple, down-to-earth example. Last week, a Muslim student at UC Merced stabbed 5 people. Cops killed this piece of garbage. Do you know that he was on a terror watch list? Do you know that that college was warned? And do you know that the police chief said that it was not terror-related? He was upset because of an exam? Do you realize that you're living in an age of total and absolute lies coming from every level of government, whether it be local, state, or federal? Do you understand any of that? Government zero. There's a meaning to the title. Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Savage.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, plan to sleep all day. Here come Tuesday.
My favorites on the Savage Nation on another Blue Monday. I can't say it's particularly Blue Monday. I mean, the last I was on the air was last Wednesday, and many of you only get the show for 2 hours. I wouldn't say many, only a few stations take it for only two. And I had some good news in the third hour, actually, that some of you heard about, which is that Government Zero was number three on the New York Times bestseller list for last week, which is a very big deal to me, and I want to thank you for patronizing the show and that book in particular. The message is what's important, really important. It's a walking billboard. The book is a walking billboard, and it has 40 actions to save America. In the last hour on this show, I jokingly said, I would like you to call and tell me what sentence or whatever from the book you'd like to challenge a liberal relative with. A quote, let's say, over Thanksgiving. And then I just was talking about, make sure if you cook the book that you don't cook it. And I said, what's the temperature? It's Fahrenheit 451, and it was written by Ray Bradbury. We had tons of calls on that. So please don't call again saying Fahrenheit 451, Ray Bradbury, because I just did it. The bigger issues are the issues that I mentioned in the last hour. I'm going to bring in a new one right now. And that was the missile test off the coast of L.A. by this crazy Girl Scout pack that's running the U.S. military. Make no sense. Why are they doing things like this? Why are they launching a Trident missile off the coast of L.A., making planes divert their flight paths at LAX when they could have tested somewhere else in the middle of the Pacific? What do you think the Girl Scouts were trying to say, number one? Then the idiotic protest in Missouri, with this juvenile list of demands issued to the university, which is right out of the Black Panthers of the 1960s. I've seen it before. We've done it. That was topic two. And then I wanted to talk about this topic, if I can find the paperwork. And it's about the death penalty, because it's a topic we never talk about anymore. If you'll notice, this used to be a big topic in the 90s, and we haven't talked about death penalty. Are you for it, against it? We're going to talk about that now. Because California is proposing a new single drug method for executions. This is a fascinating story for three reasons. Listen to the story. California unveiled a new method for executing prisoners Friday, proposing a humane and dignified single drug injection protocol that could restart capital punishment after a nearly 10-year hiatus. We all know what the psychotics in the ACLU have done to our prisons, and to the death penalty in particular. And you see, this regimen would replace a three-chemical method that the state used to kill in the past. But that mixture was struck down in 06 by a liberal whack-job judge who said it could cause inhumane suffering if one of the drugs failed to work. That was such an outrage to the little girls who had been killed, the women who had been raped, the people who had their heads chopped off with axes by these murderers on death row. And so listen to this. You're never going to believe this story. They filed a lawsuit against the state of California, that is the crime victims' families who favored the death penalty. Turnabout is fair play. They hung the state by their own petard. They copied the ACLU. They sued the state and they said, we're going to sue you because you're not invoking the death penalty. You're not following the law, as a matter of fact. We want it enforced. And so they helped develop a single drug protocol. And a settlement of this lawsuit brought by the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation has forced the state of California to devise a new lethal injection method by this month. However, it's not all good news, because the vermin in the ACLU are going to make sure that even this takes years before they are finally meeting their justice. Now, here's the question for the Savage Nation. And it's a simple question, but it's one that's worth talking about in our nation today. And that is, are you for or against the death penalty, and why? Now, I've heard the liberal argument, the type that Bernie Sanders' style, type of personality would have given, which is, it's better that 99 guilty men go free than one innocent man be punished. I've heard that since I was a child from the communists in the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens. It's better that 99 guilty people go free than one innocent. You've heard the story. Yeah, well, that insanity has led to this rampant insanity of ISIS, for example. Would you rather have 99 of them go free than one of the innocent ISIS members be executed? No, of course not. So what are the arguments for the death penalty that I have? Well, they're very simple. It's a great deterrent. Despite what the left tells you, one of the reasons people are not afraid of the death penalty in America today is because it's rarely enacted. Not only is it not enacted often enough, but anyone who commits a violent crime of this nature understands that they're going to have 30 years of the greatest detention ever imagined by a prisoner in the history of the world. 30 years of lawyers coming and kissing their rings and asking them how they feel and asking them how they're treated and legal briefs and visits to attorneys. No, the death penalty is the best answer to murder. You see, murder is the willful deprivation of a victim's right to life. And the justice system's deprivation of the criminal's right to the same is a punishment which fits the most severe crime that can be committed. And I would argue that without capital punishment, there would be no response that is equal to the crimes of murder, and there would be no justice for the victims. Secondly, it's the only thing that criminals fear. If you study criminal minds, you'll find that they don't really fear prison, because they're treated very, very well in prison, by the way, especially those on death row. As I said to you, they're given extra privileges. They have lawyers coming in and out. They have people paying attention to them. Movies are written about them by the lunatics in Hollywood. But if you read about Ted Bundy's life in prison, waiting 9 years to be executed, you'll see that he exhausted every single legal point he and the lawyers could think of in an attempt to spare him execution. He defended himself in prison interviews by blaming pornography for causing his uncontrollable teenage libido and for causing him to think of women as objects and not humans. He attempted to have his death sentence commuted to life without parole by explaining that it was all pornography's fault. You see, none of them want to die. You don't know that. That's the one thing that a would-be murderer really fears, which is the death penalty. Point number four, death penalty provides closure for victims. You understand that? It's also the ultimate warning. Capital punishment is the ultimate warning against all crimes. If a criminal knows that the justice system will not stop at putting him to death, then the system appears something to be feared. Now, he may not have any intention to kill anyone in the process of robbing them, but he'll think three times before using that gun if he knows that a crackpot liberal lawyer from NYU is not going to defend him. And he's going to fry. Those are some of the arguments in favor of the death penalty. We can talk about that. We can talk about the missile launch. We can talk about the college football players going on strike and forcing a university president to resign. And you know my feeling on that is I would have told him, we're not going to have him resign. You have every right to protest, but if you don't perform your duties, we're going to dismiss you from the football team. It's that simple. If you're not going to show up for work for a number of days, they're going to find someone to take your job, aren't they? These are good topics. Very good topics for me. If you care to discuss them, you can join the conversation on the Savage Nation this Monday by calling 855-400-7282. WMAL, Eric, you're the first up in this hour. Go ahead, please.
Missouri case where I think that the administrators are reaping what they've sown. They've taught these kids to be radical liberals, and they want to release them into society, but the kids are starting to be radical liberal and turning against
them. Well, I don't know, radical liberal. These are college football players who are now thinking that they're God Almighty, running the university any way they want. That is the issue. Now, how did these college athletes get into university to begin with? Did they get in because they all had straight A's? I mean, were they accepted because of their great intelligence or because of their great sports prowess or both? Does anyone know the answer? No answer to that question. 855-400-7282. KSFO, Sid, you're calling on the missile launch over the weekend. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I just want to say that it's pretty extreme to go from taking a destroyer and flying it and going by the island to doing a nuclear missile launch, and maybe it just shows how unprepared our administration is to go from, destroyer to
Why do you think the sorority under Obama in Government Zero launched what many people in Southern California Saturday night thought was a nuclear war? Why do you think they did that?
I think they did it because we're at a point to where maybe we do need to test that, if something really does continue to go on in the Pacific, then maybe we will have to use them. And a lot of people don't really know.
Hold on. That's fair enough. I'm glad that we do have the missiles. Great. But why did they test them off the coast of California instead of out in the Pacific? What did they do that for?
I have no idea.
This is the question. That's the $64 question. Why would the lunatic fringe running the Obama Defense Department do a thing like this where millions of people on the West Coast saw strange large flashes of light across the Pacific Ocean Saturday night as the U.S. Navy conducted a missile test firing from the USS Kentucky and Ohio-class SSBN in the Pacific test range? Why did they not go out, let's say, 500 miles into the ocean? Why did they do it right off the coast of Los Angeles? Why?
I'm going to just throw this. This may sound crazy, but maybe it wasn't even our missile. I mean, what if someone else made a point?
Okay. Very, very good. You know something? I never thought of that. Oh, we're assuming we did it. Maybe we didn't. Holy God. I didn't think of that one. You get two copies of Government Zero. Because zero plus zero equals zero, Sid. Yeah, let's run that paranoid conspiracy by our heads for a while. Wait a minute. We're being told that our Navy conducted this test right off the coast of L.A. It was a routine test. And planes had to be diverted out of LAX. But what if it wasn't our own Navy? What if it was the Russian Navy? What if it was the Chinese Navy launching something into the sky off our coast to say hello? Very intriguing, is it not? Yes, indeed, my friends. The world gets more interesting by the day, right here on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COI. All right, this is a great conversation. I mean, I haven't had this since the 90s, which is the death penalty, and that's because a group of victims' families sued the state of California, insisting that the death penalty be followed, and they worked with chemical companies to create a single drug that could take the life of these people on death row. And we'll talk about the death penalty. It's a fascinating discussion that hasn't been had in radio for years. I mean, if you want to listen to stuff about Carson, go ahead, day and night. Carson, Schmarson, Boston, Larson, all aboard. How much more can I take of this? So I'm going to talk about something more interesting, and I'm going to also reintroduce some elements of my program, I think, this week. I was reminded this morning by Brian Sussman, who fills in for me on KSFO, that in the early days of my radio show, I used to do an hour a week on nutrition, stuff like that. I'm not interested in politics 15 hours a week. I'm just not that interested in it. It's boring at a certain point, isn't it? You know, old men with ties are not the most exciting thing on the world stage. Nevertheless, okay. In the United States, there are five legal methods of execution. Lethal injection, electrocution, firing squad, hanging, and gassing. I'm in favor of the death penalty for many reasons. Jordan on WABC, you oppose the death penalty. Why?
I oppose the death penalty because I think that we have a great nation, and great nations should set an example, and we should not be setting an example that we are going to respond to the barbarity of one person with another kind of barbarity, And
Wait, hold on. I've heard this argument before. Now let me take your temperature. Are you in favor of what Planned Parenthood does to the unborn?
No.
Are you in favor of abortion?
No, but I do believe in a woman's right to choose.
Okay, that's a fair answer. And, of course, the word choose is a loaded word, but we won't go there. So you don't think the unborn should have the right to life that a society protects them from? They're the most vulnerable in society, aren't they?
Right, and I do believe, though, that Roe versus Wade, you know, it established that the state has...
All right, so you're citing law, Roe versus Wade. Well, I got news for you. In California, there's a law. It's called the death penalty. It's on the books. And the liberals have evaded the law because they won't enact the law. So which laws do we follow is the question. Why is it that in every poll, no matter where it's taken and by no matter which firm, invariably results in the same result, which is that people are in favor of the death penalty? Why do you think the average person favors a death penalty? Even though you don't, and I respect your opinion, I don't agree with it. Why do you think so many people favor the death penalty?
I think that they favor it because... when you're faced with the kind of disgusting types of behaviors that we're talking about, I think that people's worst, kind of most basest feelings become, you know, kind of take over. And they
would you execute an ISIS murderer who beheaded 30 children if he was caught and brought to trial? Would you favor his execution, or you think that that's barbaric to kill him?
That happened. I can't say that I'm in favor of execution, but...
Oh, so you would keep ISIS rapists alive forever in our prisons and give them halal meals and Qurans and prayer rugs and medical care for the next 40 years?
I don't like that.
Oh, there we go. Be very careful what you wish for, my friend, because if you eliminate the death penalty, as sure as I'm sitting here, very, very shortly in this country, we're going to have to enact the death penalty in one of our federal prisons to get rid of some of these people who are sitting there and some of their friends who are coming here or waiting to do something to us that we all know will be devastating to our society.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
So Feinstein says we should join with Russia in fighting ISIS, which is amazing. And then she says, with ISIS, either we fight them now or fight them later. I don't know what got into her, but I'd like to congratulate her psychiatrist for changing the titration of her medication, if that's the explanation, because how in the world did she come to her senses all of a sudden? She says, we will fight them now or we will fight them later. It's only a question of time. And then she said that she wants us to join with Russia in fighting ISIS. Now, either she's listening to my show or, again, we have to congratulate her therapist for titrating her properly, finally finding the exact right cocktail to give her the thinking necessary to work on the Senate Intelligence Committee. Unbelievable to me. Now, we're talking about the death penalty as well on the Savage Nation. And I'm in favor of it for obvious reasons, not because I'm a mean guy, but because I think it deters people from committing the most extreme act. And you say, well, if it did, then why do we still have 15,000 homicides a year or more in the United States? Drugs, accidents, insanity, who knows why? And as far as I'm concerned, anyone who commits homicide, that's not in self-defense, by the way, should face the death penalty. See, I believe that one of the reasons America was a much safer nation in the 1950s is because there were not as many years of appeals. You got an appeal, I think, or one or two, but I think the general rule was if you were found guilty by trial, you generally had one appeal and you were executed within a year. I mean, you know, old Sparky was working pretty hot and heavy up at Sing Sing. They kept that thing greased up and ready to go. And old Sparky put a lot of bad people across the river Styx. And I believe that was a great deterrent. In other words, a guy goes in to hold up a store. He's not going to be so quick to pull the trigger. Today, what do they care? They get to go to jail. People support them. The idiot lawyers from Cornell come up and kiss their behind, ask them how their treatment is. They need group therapy. You know the game. So the thing is that we need a lot more executions, not a lot fewer, and we need them done a lot faster, and we need to streamline the appeals process so it doesn't go on any longer than 2 or 3 years max, no more than 2 years. Do you know that there are lawyers whose entire career has been defending one death row inmate? It's a lifetime sinecure for some of these low-life lawyers. They spend their whole life filing briefs on behalf of these guilty people. That's my opinion. And that's why it's worth talking about. And the missile test over the coast. Big deal. It's a big deal, a missile test. Something's going on, I'll tell you. Something's really weird about that. Let's take some calls. Luigi, WABC. I got to put my glasses on so I don't hit the wrong button. Luigi, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you, sir. Regarding the missile launch off the California coast, I believe the world, as well as the American people, have a low opinion of Obama. I believe they believe that he doesn't have a backbone, and that was proven when he drew the line in the sand with Syria. He never backed it up. Now, to make himself appear of a person that is ready and willing to take on a fight, he sends this missile up in the air and yada, yada, yada. And this way he proves to the world, yes, he's got the backbone, and also to the American people.
Wait a minute. You're saying Obama launched that missile test off the coast of L.A. over the weekend when he could have done it, let's say, unseen in the middle of the Pacific in order to impress Americans who think he's a weakling?
Absolutely. Because here we are, we're talking about it. We're talking about it because it was shot up right off the California coast, and the Californians saw it and they said, "Wow, you know, it was they might have thought it was a nuclear war, but no, I believe that's exactly what he did. I believe that's. I mean, look at the world opinion. Look at what the world feels of Obama.
Right, he's known as a very weak leader, and it came out just last week, by the way, before the test, that he was downgraded to the number three most powerful person in the world, number one being Putin, number two being Merkel, number three being our president. And strangely enough, it's the first time in modern history that a U.S. president was not in the top two. So he definitely is seen as a weak leader, there's no question, but he is vicious and malicious when it comes to the American people and the Republican Party. Do I have to talk about him weaponizing the government against conservatives and pro-Israeli groups? Do I have to talk about him weaponizing the DOJ? Do I have to talk about him weaponizing the DOJ use of the Espionage Act to spy on reporters during election season? Do I have to talk about him weaponizing the EPA and attacking Gibson guitars? Do I have to talk about him weaponizing the EPA and attacking fossil fuels, gun dealers and gun owners through Operation Chokepoint and Operation Fast and Furious? I mean, I could talk about all these things that this very, very malicious, very devious president has done to rather innocent businesses and people in this country while being quite supine to the real threats to the earth. Don't you agree with me?
Boots. Yet he doesn't want to put any boots in the Middle East to fight ISIS. But yet here he is. He's showing off his strength by sending off a missile from a warship, a submarine. I mean, it's ridiculous.
By the way, you live in New York. I live on the West Coast. I didn't see the flash because I'm in Northern California. Did you read about that flash on the East Coast? Did it make the newspapers?
To be honest with you, I haven't looked at a newspaper today. No, I haven't looked at
it. No, I'm saying, but over the weekend, did you see it on TV? Was that run on any news channel, that missile test?
Excuse me?
Was it run on any major news channel over the weekend?
Fox.
No, you didn't see it. You see, the government media complex hid it from you in cahoots with Government Zero. I'm sending you a free copy of that book for Thanksgiving. Stay on the line. Now, here's somebody sent me this something. Maybe we should outlaw guns for Democrats. One, 1865, a Democrat shot and killed Abraham Lincoln. Two, 1881, a left-wing radical Democrat shot James Garfield. Three, 1963, a radical left-wing socialist shot and killed John F. Kennedy. 1975, a left-wing radical Democrat fired shots at Gerald Ford. 1983, a registered Democrat shot and wounded Ronald Reagan. 1984, a disgruntled Democrat, James Hubert, shot and killed 22 people in a McDonald's. 1986, a disgruntled Democrat, Patrick Sherrill, shot and killed 15 people in an Oklahoma post office. 1990, James Poo, a disgruntled Democrat, shot and killed 10 people at a GMAC office. 91, George Henard, a disgruntled Democrat, shot and killed 23 people in a Luby's cafeteria. 1995, James Daniel Simpson, a disgruntled Democrat, shot and killed 5 co-workers in a Texas lab. 99, Larry Asbrook, a disgruntled Democrat, shot and killed 8 people at a church service. 2001, a left-wing radical Democrat fired shots at the White House in a failed attempt to kill G.W. Bush. 2003, Douglas Williams, a disgruntled Democrat, shot and killed seven people at a Lockheed Martin plant. 2007, a registered Democrat named Shung Hui Chu shot and killed 32 people in Virginia Tech. 2010, a mentally ill registered Democrat named Jared Lee Loeffner shot Rep. Gabrielle Giffords and killed six others. 2011, a registered Democrat named James Holmes went into a movie theater and shot and killed 12 people. 2012, Andrew Engeldinger, a disgruntled Democrat, shot and killed seven people in Minneapolis. 2013, a registered Democrat named Adam Lanza shot and killed 26 children and school people in a school in Newton, Connecticut. 2013, an angry Democrat shot 12 at a Navy shipyard. Someone wrote, clearly there is a problem with Democrats and guns. Not one NRA member, Tea Party member, or Republican conservative was involved in any of these shootings and murders. Solution, it should be illegal for Democrats to own guns. We don't need gun control. We need Democrat control. Guns don't kill people. Democrats do. Someone sent this to me from a local car dealer. I really love this. You know, I was in the street the other day. I forget, where was I? I was in the street the other day, right? And, no, I was in a dive bar somewhere. I forget where. I don't know where I went. I have no idea where. I went to have a drink somewhere. And it was a quiet afternoon. No one was around. I just wanted to stop in for a quick soda. The minute I walk in, there were four people, and a guy comes running up. He says, Michael Savage, you Michael Savage. He said, I feel your energy. I know it's you. He said, you saved me. You got me off marijuana. I said, wow, that's great. Then another thing happened to me. The next night, a guy came up and said to me that I saved him. And you know something, at a certain point in your career, you take satisfaction in knowing that your message after many years has finally gotten around and that people are listening to you. And I want to thank all of you, by the way, who listen to the show daily. You know, look, the core of my life as a professional is the radio show. It's the center of my life. I love writing. I started as a writer, not as a broadcaster. And one day I will publish stuff that many of you probably won't even like. It's fiction, but not commercial fiction. It's not like the great Jack Hatfield series, which were meant for a different audience, as much as I love those books. I wrote for years alone in rooms and houses, much like any artist does, and I've never published any of that work. And I found it recently in manuscript form. Handwritten manuscript form from the 70s, from the 80s, actually from the 60s, 70s, 80s. And I think some of it's good enough to publish. And I'm hoping that sometime in the next year or two to publish it myself. And one of them is going to be called, I was going to call it The Dark Side of Michael Savage. But then I think, well, do you really want to put that out there? I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I'm not sure. But what I'm saying to you is, yeah, there's other sides to me. I have watercolors that I think are amateurish but interesting that people would be interested in. And last night I actually fantasized having an art opening. Would you believe that? So let people see it so they can ridicule me or enjoy it. What's the difference? You think I'm worried about whether an art critic thinks I can paint? It doesn't matter to me. I didn't paint those pictures so some critic could say, hey, he's really good. I don't care. I think they're good. They're simple, but they're good. And I'd like to maybe put a show together, an art show one day. I want to branch out into other spheres of my being while I'm still here, and I'll tell you why. I love radio, but radio is two-dimensional. And I'm a four-dimensional or five-dimensional or six-dimensional person. And that's all I want to say. That's all. So thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for buying Government Zero. It means a lot to me. It's a very, very big deal to succeed at this level, at this stage of my life, after working at it my whole life, by the way. I never thought, I mean, I dream, you know, it's like a kid dreams about being an astronaut or a baseball player, but who's really an astronaut or a baseball player, right? I want to be, well, I always dreamed of being a writer. Well, guess what? I've had five New York Times bestsellers in a row. It's a big deal for me. It's happened. And so it's all because of my listeners and my audience. That's all. But there are other sides of me that I think need to live is what I'm saying. I don't know. Am I explaining myself properly? I think everybody has other aspects of their being that want to be exhibited in the artistic, you know, world. anyway, it's a distraction, I guess, from the main core of the show. Although some people listen for the diversions and distractions more than for the show itself. They want me to go off into a tangent. They want me to start playing the verbal saxophone. They want me to be the John Coltrane of talk radio. They want me to pick up the tenor sax. They want me to start blowing the horn. They want me to go into a riff that suddenly ends. So let's play some John Coltrane for a minute, if you could find it. I know it's a last-minute thing. I'm almost feeling like moving into my old format of Cafe Savage, which, by the way, I used to do on a local station 20 years ago, 19 years ago, 18 years ago. I had an afternoon drive show on the West Coast, and now it's afternoon drive on the East, which is a step up, by the way. And I used to, some afternoons when it was rainy and wet and I didn't feel like getting too stressed out on politics. All right, so I have Cafe Savage, and I play the sounds of glasses clinking, and I'd say, coming into Cafe Savage, have a drink, have a glass of wine, have a coffee, have a cappuccino, and remember who I am. I'm the guy who owns the cafe. It's my cafe. I'm a nice guy, and let's have a conversation. That's what I used to do, and that's what I'm going to do.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
I'd like to have been, I would like to be B.B. King for one night in Memphis. Man, what a feeling that was. What music. Good God. Who would you like to be for 1 hour of your life? If you could have 1 hour of anyone's life, well, many of you would say you'd like to be me. Don't. You don't want to walk in these shoes 1 hour on the radio. Let me tell you that. Does anyone out there know Latin? Caeum Deus vult perdere dementat prius. I hope it's not a dirty word that I just said. Caeum Deus vult perdere dementat prius. Anyone who knows Latin, and I mangled it, I'm sure, will win a free copy of Government Zero. I think I know what it means, but I pray to God that I think I know what it means, and it's not a series of curse words, because I'm not 100% sure. I know botanical Latin fairly well. I know genus and species. But Caeum, Q-U-E-M-D-E-U-S-V-U-L-T-P-E-R-D-E-R-E-D-E-M-E-N-T-A-T-P-R-I-U-S. And I'm not talking about Larry David's car. Okay, we're going back to the missile launch. Let's go to WMAL. Fred, you're a submariner. Tell us what you have to say.
First of all, Savage, those things are called DASOs. That stands for a demonstration and shakedown operability. And they fire these submarine missiles all the time on the West Coast, on the Pacific Flight Range, which is right near Vandenberg, which I'm thinking that's great.
But Fred, hold on. Here's a question. Why did they do this so close to the coast instead of way out in the Pacific Test Range?
That's a good question. Normally it's done, you know, far enough out. I mean, you can still see it from the coast if it's shot at night like it was, because I've seen the film. And can't answer that question unless they want.
All right, hold it. You're a submariner. What's the range of a Trident missile?
I can't tell you that, sir.
It's illegal to. I mean, you say it's classified.
Well, it's pretty far. Let's put it that. You could probably look it up.
I think you can Google it. At the last I checked, I think it was 4,500 miles. In other words, you could reach China with a Trident missile from the West Coast. And I believe that that's what our military is trying to say to the Chinese, frankly. That's what I think this was about. Let's put aside the indigenous conspiracies about Obama and this and that. I think they were sending a strong signal to China, which is don't mess with us. We're not as weak as you may think. Maybe that's it. I'm sending you a copy of Government Zero. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or don't be here.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Now, one day when my book is written, the book that I can't publish right now, you'll hear about the ups and downs of Michael Savage's professional life, and you'll not believe what you have to go through in the media. Let me put it to you this way. I can't be specific. I just went through 4 days of hell, absolute hell, and it was all about a misunderstanding. And now I'm back. And with God's will, I'll be here for a very long time. Let's put it to you that way. That's all I want to say. It's all I'm going to say. Don't call me. I feel good. It's what it is, the way life is. It's about a high-stakes life. It's like being in a gambling... it's like being in a very high-stakes poker game every day of your life at 3 hours a day. Not only because if you say one wrong word, your career is going to be over. But other things go on that you have no control over, and people da-da-da-da-da-da-da-do, and that's it. So what I'd rather do right now than talk... I'll talk about the missile launch off the coast of L.A., why they launched it, China, the Yuan, the Dance of Death in the West, which I read, which I think is a brilliant opening to Government Zero. I'm sorry, it's a great book, and I know it's going to be around for a while. It's going to be one of those small American classics. And I just feel like playing music for a few minutes. So did we just play Come Go With Me? Was that it? Okay, let's go to Don't Ask Me to Be Lonely by the Doves. I think I'm going to be a DJ on the Savage Nation for a few minutes. Just rock and roll Monday because, well, I don't know, it's fun. It's all cut and dried and hard and mean, and men are seen as this and women are seen as that. No one's on a pedestal. No one's on anything anymore. No one's looked up to, no one's looked down. Everyone's a piece of meat in our society. So let's play something. Do you have the translation? Let's see, whom the... I can't, it's a KM. Deus vult perdere dement prius. Whom the gods would destroy, he first drives mad. Is that ever applicable to me, my friends? I was on that precipice for 4 days now. KM Diaz vult perdere demen prius. Pardon me for mangling my Latin, but it's the best I can do as a boy from the Bronx who didn't go to Catholic school. Whom the gods would destroy, he would first drive mad. Is that ever appropriate for this afternoon? Quem dies vult perdere dement prius. I think I should put this on my bedroom wall, because I could break into laughter every night looking at this one. Thank you, God. Thank you very much for taking me to the precipice and bringing me back, because, you know, it feels good to come back from the precipice of anything. Now we'll go back to regular programming on the Savage Nation by playing a little more music instead of talking about the death penalty. How about... I don't know. What do you want to hear right now? I can't ask you because I have my own playlist. We used to have Carl Perkins, Blue Suede Shoes. We have Fats Domino, Blueberry Hill. Bobby Darin, Beyond the Sea. Let me hear Bobby Darin, Beyond the Sea. Because I think Shark Skin Suit. I think razor cut haircuts. I think guys who look like men. I don't think metrosexual. I don't think whatever. You think about men wore shoes in those days. I mean, just think about that. Look at footwear. Just look at footwear. Everyone looks like either they're going on a hike or they just came off a basketball court. How did that happen, that every man looks like he came back from a hike in the middle of the Grand Canyon? A backpack and shoes, scruffy beard, and no one wears shoes anymore. Even shoes are gone. Even the shoe is gone. Well, I myself don't wear shoes. I don't like them. I wear a sneaker today. It's not a bad thing. You know what I do sometimes? I watch like gangster movies from the 60s and 70s when all the cars were American cars. And I see like bad guys being chased by cops. And I realize even if the bad guy just had a sneaker in those days, he could have outrun the cop. Or if the cop had a sneaker and the bad guy didn't have a sneaker, the cop could have caught the bad guy faster. Or when I see bad guys running through like wooded areas in movies from the 70s, and they're wearing like shoes, like with leather soles, and they're sliding on the leaves. I think, man, if they only had hiking shoes, just think about that one. Anyway, little things like that, I entertain myself with it. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's around 10 minutes after 5 on the East Coast, about 10 minutes after 5 on the 2 on the East Coast. Wait, where's my clock about what time? I want to know what time it is in Jordan right now. I need my international clock. I don't know anyone in Jordan, but I want to know what time it is. I know it's plus 9 hours in London right now. Like, I care. What are they doing in London? I'm imagining. Do you ever sit in your house when you're bored and you say, let's say, it's this time here, but what are they doing in China right now? Do you ever get that weird parallax view of the universe? Like when you, let's say you live on the West Coast and then you travel to New York and you get to New York and it's like dark and people are running around, and then you're walking around and saying, like, while I'm sleeping, this all this life's going on somewhere, or like crazy stuff, like the world is not what you think it is. And then you have to deal with that whole issue of what is reality. I mean, your reality is you're going to sleep 10:30, 11 at night. Somewhere else it's morning. Okay, that's a given. But like they're hustling about. Or how about when you leave your normal cozy house and you go to the airport and you see all this rushing and hustle and bustle, and then you're back in your house in a week and say, good God, while I'm laying here, all this is going on at Oakland International Airport or at SFO. And you say, well, what am I doing? Like, what world am I living in? Is this my reality? What's my reality? Watching pelicans hunt for herring or what? See, this is the thing about reality, is you have to understand how difficult it is, because once you eat from the apple of knowledge, you become like Eve herself, and you're cast out of that good place called heaven. And it's very hard to live in the other place without having a multitasking mind that can live in 2 to 3 to 15 places at once, unless you're a very stupid person and you believe Hillary Clinton is the best candidate on earth and that Barack Obama is an honest, wonderful man who loves America. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 855-497-2822. I am in such a liberated mood that I don't know if I even want to do this right now. I feel like reaching across the table, which is 15 feet away, and picking up a manuscript that I wrote 35 years ago and out of the blue starting to read from an old manuscript. But I won't do that because I'm not going to do it. Not at all. I'm going to take your calls in the Savage Nation. WFTL, here we go. Someone caught the drift. John, on WFTL in Fort Lauderdale, what's on your mind, John?
Hey, Doctor, you were talking a little bit about the saxophone a couple days ago, and now you're just doing Somewhere Beyond the Sea, and you're completely misunderstanding that song. That song, first thing, is about somebody he's had his wife die, or he's had his lover die, but he's so certain that he's going to meet her in the afterlife, she's waiting for him. And she's closer than the moon. If he could fly like a bird, that's what that song is about.
Well, hold on, John. I'm not denying or accepting what you said. Is it true that Bobby Darin lost a wife?
No, I don't know about that. What you need to do is listen to...
Whoa. Wait a minute. How are you so sure that that's what the lyrics mean?
If you listen to Rod Stewart's version of that song, it's clear. And the saxophone, if you listen to the saxophone the way Rod Stewart's version does it, you're literally listening to God breathe life into Adam. That is that incredible a note. And the progression from a short oboe...
John, are you a musician, I assume?
A little bit. I'm not that good. But
all right, no, I'm not challenging you. I have no musical abilities whatsoever. So, Robert, play Somewhere Beyond the Sea for 1 minute. We're talking about a song. Would you believe this in the middle of missile testing? I think that the lyrics could easily mean he's dreaming of a lover, a mythical lover, who he doesn't even know. He's dreaming about an imaginary lover, John. Isn't that possible? Keep playing it.
If I could... It's possible, but I think if you look...
Hold on, John, wait. I want to hear the lyrics. Go ahead. Jury's going to find love. Okay, stop. So I think it could be a man imagining a perfect love somewhere that he hasn't found, John.
I think what you have in the Bobby Darin version is kind of a bouncy cocktail kind of ditty kind of thing.
Well, I think of the Copa, right. I'm thinking Copa 1960s, right, with the good fellas sitting up front, with the table moving, with the tablecloth and the this and the that. Okay, I got it. But the thing is, what do the lyrics mean?
My suggestion would be to listen to the Rod Stewart version, and you can see in the music the progression of, it's almost as if he's dull without life. And you can hear how...
Wait, hold on. I'm listening to every word you're saying. He's dull without life? Is that what you just said?
Until the woman has come into his life and his...
That's what I'm saying. Okay, wait, but you said something intriguing. His life is empty. His life is very empty and flat. And he's dreaming of a full life when he falls in love with this imaginary lover that he's been dreaming of all his life. Isn't that what you're saying?
Not at all, because she's waiting for him. They'll be together.
Whoa. It doesn't mean she died and went to heaven and he's going to meet her. It could mean that somewhere in this huge world of ours, there is a perfect match for us that will complete us and make us happy. Isn't that what most people dream about? Even in marriages that don't work, they always dream there's someone else out there is going to make them happier. We all know it's a myth.
Absolutely, but the lyrics say that they're going to kiss again, like they did before.
Yeah, all right, so people get it. But what do you think? So people get into love affairs, they kiss again, they think they're in heaven, and how long does that last? 90 days?
They're separated not by water, but by life. That's what it is.
All right. I'm going to send you a gift for Thanksgiving called Government Zero. I love this discussion because I think poetry is critical to the human soul, and there's such a lack of poetry in the human soul. And you know why? I mean, look, there's a million reasons why. Not only has our own society become deadened to poetry and to a flight of the soul, an actual flight of the soul, because of the over-materialization of the soul and the commercialization of the soul, etc. But you look at an ISIS group, which is a totally anti-human organization. It's not even dehumanized. It's an anti-human group, a subhuman group, that we all become desensitized to the higher flights of the soul, right? I got to look up the lyrics to that somewhere beyond the sea and find out who wrote it. And in the interim, I hope you listen to these important messages.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUYCOIN. Heart will leave me there soon. All right, cut the record off. It's enough already. Schmuckville is over. I had a good time. What am I going to do? I'm going to eat my heart out every day over Bernie Sanders and the other one, what's his name? I don't even remember his name anymore. Carson. He'll be forgotten. Within a year, no one will remember his name. It's like a big deal now. And you look back, you look forward, you know, somewhere. Anyway, I read where this came from, this song. It was a French song originally, Somewhere Beyond the Sea. Just to finish it up, since we opened up the Pandora's box. It was music taken from the song La Mer by Charles Trenet in French. Then they changed the lyrics. The original version was an homage and ode to the changing moods of the sea. Then Jack Lawrence added one word beyond to the title, and he made the song into one of a dear lover mourning for a lost love, which is what the last caller was talking about. He was mourning of a dear lover mourning for a lost love. Okay. But it can be interpreted another way. I always like the song because it represents an era. That's all. I don't want to get hung up on one tangent. An era in America when it was a totally different universe. Things worked a lot better in America then. Yeah, don't bring up already. I hear already the resonance, the whole chorus already. They'll bring up the whole chorus again. Yeah. I got the whole story. It was a great time to live in America. Let me tell you what a wonderful country it was. All I can tell you this, your mother could walk to the corner grocery store to buy a loaf of bread without getting molested by a gang. That's all. And if you stepped out of line, a cop would give you a beating with a club and throw you behind the building and the neighborhood was safe. That's all. That's all. It's a different country. Today, if a cop looks at you the wrong way, you call the ACLU. Take a look at what's going on in the country. Out of control. Murders, shootings, gangbangers everywhere. Tattoos on people's souls. I never saw anything like this. A breakdown in law and order. You know, that's the candidacy I'd run on. You want to hear my campaign platform? Simple. Law and order. How's that for a campaign slogan? Have you heard it from any of the candidates? Law and order?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
You'll have to take the first letter of the last word of the second sentence. I don't know. I'll have to figure it out. Like the way they do it in prisons, whatever. I feel good. It's a crazy world. When has the world not been crazy? Right? When has the world not been crazy? Is it really crazier today than it ever was? Yes. Do we really have a man in the White House that we can't trust? Yes. Are things as bad as we think they are, or are we just paranoid and racist? No. He's worse than you think. Does he really love America? No. Although there was one thing today that gave me pause. I watched the meeting between Netanyahu and Obama. I noticed some very peculiar things going on. One, I noticed Netanyahu had his hat in his hand. He was like almost like, as we used to call it, fumfering. Those of you who are from New York, he sounded like a fumfer. I mean, Netanyahu's a straight up, you know, alpha male, a real war hero, and Obama's, you know, basically the opposite. But he sat there like with his hat in his hand.
You must be helping Israel. I'm really thankful you're always standing with the Jewish people.
That was number one. So Netanyahu came with his hat in hand. I guess they need some gelt over there, another shipment. That was one. Sorry. And Obama was like, all of a sudden, told the Palestinians to stop stabbing Jews in the neck. I was shocked. Did you hear that soundbite? I sat there on the edge of my seat. Where is that soundbite? Where he doesn't say we want both sides to stop it. No, it was pretty clear. Here, Play clip six, Robert, please. Listen to this.
I have an opportunity to discuss some of the concerns that both of us have around violence in the Palestinian territories. I want to be very clear that we condemn in the strongest terms Palestinian violence against innocent Israeli citizens.
Unbelievable.
And I want to repeat once again, is my strong belief that Israel has not just the right, but the obligation to protect itself.
Amazing. Now, that was a huge change for Mr. Hussein Obama. I got to tell you, when I listened to him speak, I was sure he was going to say, we condemn in the strongest terms violence on both sides. You're playing it neutral again, moral equivalence, but he didn't. And then he went on to support Israel's right to exist. So whoever wrote this script for him was very, very careful. Very, very careful to write that statement for the president. Maybe he wrote it himself. I don't really know. But that was a major change, in case you haven't noticed it. As one of the keenest observers in the political world right now, that was a huge change for Barack Obama, I got to tell you. And Netanyahu pulled his horns in, sorry. And again, was
thank you so much for the Jewish people.
Let's hear for a minute. To clip seven, you'll listen to the newly humbled Netanyahu in clip seven.
I remain committed to a vision of peace, of okay. Two states for two peoples, a demilitarized Palestinian state that recognizes the Jewish state. I don't think that anyone should doubt Israel's determination
okay,
to defend itself against terror.
On the, but it was a different Netanyahu. They practiced him. I could just see them practice him. All right, Benny, let's try it again. When you're over there with Obama, cut the voice down. Don't boom it. He's also got a booming voice, and maybe bigger than yours. Back it off a bit. And it's hard. My glasses just fell on the floor. It's hard for him to do that. So I can imagine they rehearsed him over and over again in an office somewhere in Tel Aviv. All right, no, cut it out. Go back. You're two octaves too high. And it must have been hard for him to do it. Maybe they rehearsed him on the plane over. I don't know what it was. But he was a different guy. He asked for a two-state solution. And Obama agreed Israel has a right to exist. This was a very big deal. It was a huge change, I got to tell you. I don't know if you noticed this. Yeah, I noticed these things. That's why you listen to the show. And, I mean, we could talk about the death penalty if you want. But before, I don't have much time, like 20 minutes left of the show. I got to play something else that's very important here. Oh, here we go. If I go through this day without playing that creature, Bernie Sanders, I'd be remiss. Here is Bernie Sanders again provoking class warfare in clip number 14. Robert, please.
What motivated me? Do you think 30 years ago, Jane and I were talking, I said, Jane, I think I'm going to become president. Let's plan it out. A 30-year route to become president. You know, people do that. So I think it is fair to say that my life has been motivated from way back when I was a kid for the fight for social and economic justice.
Yeah, right.
And that's
right.
What motivates me.
Yeah, it's fight for social justice. It's a fight to get ahead using people of color as your audience. What are you talking about? You're a demagogue from the get-go. I grew up with people like you. The day you let go of a nickel out of your pocket for someone who's poor, let me hear about it. The day you let go of more than a 7% tip in a restaurant, I'd like to hear about it, Bernie. You're as cheap as they come. Don't tell me you're such a benevolent creature. There's social justice. Ask a cab driver how much tip Bernie Sanders might leave him in a cab ride the next time he's in Washington, D.C. If he leaves him a dime, I would find it surprising. Believe me, you don't want to be a waiter serving Bernie. Here's a question for you. Here's the whole election in a nutshell. I'll figure it out right now. If you were a waiter, who would you rather serve? Waiter or waitress, who would you rather serve knowing that the tip is going to be the biggest? A, Bernie Sanders. B, Donald Trump. C, Ben Carson. D, Celia Cruz's grandson. E, the ice cream man, Rubio, or the guitar player. I forgot him. He's off the stage already. Or Maria Shriver. I don't know. I forget her name. Carly Fiorina. It's like Pablum, Marina, Farina. Who do you think is going to be the biggest tipper, despite all their rhetoric? Donald Trump would throw him the biggest tip. Sanders is on the bottom of the list. Sanders is the type of guy who walks out without leaving a tip. I had friends like that years ago. I haven't seen him in years. But let's say we'd all go to a meal in North Beach. And we did. We go to these family-style Italian restaurants. I used to love it. Or Chinese. 5, 10 people, right? These are the guys that when the bill would come, and it was a poet too, owns a big bookstore in North Beach, a real commie, a friend of the people. You never wanted to go to dinner with this one if you're a waiter. Forget about it. Let's say the bill came and it was $43 and there were six people. And then a tip had to be figured out. You had to have a higher degree in mathematics from Stanford to figure out that the tip to the cent that these people would leave. And what they owed, I didn't eat the lettuce, you ate the lettuce, and I had the wine. Although it was a jug of wine, I only drank one sip. You drank three glasses, I was watching you, so therefore I'm taking off 12 cents from the wine bill. My side was lower, and you had the veal parmesan. I only had the spaghetti carbonara, which was $1.10 less, and therefore I should pay 2 cents. You never could believe these people. They were the worst. I mean, the more progressive they were, the less they would pay for the joint bill. And number two, they'd stiff everyone. They'd give a walk out of the restaurant. They'd be the first ones to march. You'd see the back of their costume on the way out the door. While lecturing on social justice and injustice, they were the ones who left nothing on the table. That's all. Don't think I'm talking out of that, out of turn. I know what I'm talking about. That's simple. I know how it works. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. In other words, it was times just like this. It's that simple. Ken on WJR in Michigan. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Ken, what's on your mind?
Mr. Savage, if you were just a DJ and playing your favorite songs, I would turn into listening to you because the stuff they play nowadays on any channel on the radio is just garbage. Grew up listening.
Well, we all have people who like us. You know, that's the beautiful thing about talk radio is everyone has their own following. And there's a little overlap from one show to the other, but I appreciate the people who like me the most. Obviously, I like that, but, you know, it's a long day part, and there's room for all of us. It's that simple. I'm going to send you a gift for Thanksgiving, only under one condition. Name the book, and you'll get it. What's the name?
Government Zero.
You got it for Thanksgiving.
Thank you, sir.
Just remember, don't cook it at Fahrenheit 450. Well, I forget the four. What was the number? 450. 451, that's the temperature at which paper burns. Yes. I got some good callers coming in now. I just got this. The range of a Trident missile, as I guessed, I was pretty close. I said 4,100 miles, didn't I? A Trident has a range of 4,573 miles. I read a lot. 4,573, and the Chinese can only fire the missiles 1,500 miles into the ocean. So if I were to look at this from the point of view of saber rattling, China's threatening America. Their missiles go 1,500 miles, so they could probably hit, Alaska, God forbid, or Hawaii, God forbid, if that. We're saying that we could launch, well, of course, we don't have to launch from the West Coast in a ballistic submarine. It could be anywhere in the Pacific. But let's say we have the capacity to launch from anywhere and hit them. Who the heck would want to do a thing like that in a world like this? Do you actually think the Chinese want to wipe out an American city? Are you crazy? Who would buy all that plastic garbage if they did? I mean, think about it from the point of the Chinese people. I like them very much, by the way, are very practical people, whether they're communists or not. You think they're going to kill their best customers for buying the garbage that they make? What, are you crazy? Don't be nuts. Who's going to buy that crap? There's not enough people on earth to buy all the garbage they produce. So don't be worried about this happening. They're not the problem. Not at all. I wouldn't think of it that way. The other day, I remember I was off Friday. Yeah. I had some things I had to do, and I wanted a breather from promoting the Government Zero, and I needed a break, and I was under pressure, and it was like a this and a that. I went into San Francisco. I had lunch in a cheap Chinese place that I liked the best, a Greasy Spoon. I go there all the time. I've been eating there for 40 years. It's fantastic. No tablecloths. The cups are greasy, but the food is unbelievable. And then I walk up to North Beach. It was like the light. There's a certain light in San Francisco at this time of year. You can't describe it. I did in my novel, Abuse of Power, how Jack talks about the streets and the color of the bay. It's not quite that China blue yet of the winter. But the streets at about 3:30, the way the light hits the buildings in North Beach, the way the Italians painted there, the greens and the reds, you have to see it to understand what I'm saying to you. And you have to be from here to understand the beauty of the city and know where to go. And most people who write about the city don't even know the city the way I do. Anyway, I go up there. And I go up to a Chinese antique store on Upper Grant Avenue. It's a small store. You could walk right past it. You wouldn't even know it's there. And I haven't been in there in a year. I bought a pair of food dogs from the lady who owns it about a year ago. They were Ming Dynasty wooden chromatic food dogs. Very, very museum, high museum quality, very expensive. I went in there, and she says, "Oh, hello, Mr. Savage." And she said, "Oh, I don't have any of that weird Well, I got to remember the words. Any of the weird, scary stuff that you like. So I had to have a laugh on that. And then she proceeded to teach me about beads and urns and cloisonné. She was like going to a museum, Karate. You know, I really enjoyed that. And then, of course, the rest of the day is my business. That's all. Not your business the rest of the day. It was not very exciting. Now let's go back to regular programming on the Savage Nation. WJR Jim on the death penalty issue. What's on your mind, please?
Hi, Dr. Savage. Yeah, you know, I'm pro-death penalty, but like you pointed out, there's some flaws there with the appeals, and there's flaws in prison itself. And I'd love to see something go back to hard labor. I mean, you know, bring these hard prisoners in and drop them in general population and with a cot and three simple meals and let them earn everything to upgrade for everything.
Do you think that prisoners are treated too well in the United States of America? Is that what you suspect?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you know, I have very mixed feelings on that opinion. I'll tell you why. On the face of it, we can easily say that prisoners are treated too well. Then you have to add up how many people are in prison who don't belong there. And I'm talking about low-level, white-collar criminals. I'm talking about people who dealt, let's say, marijuana 30 years ago, been in jail for 30 years in some state that's retrograde. You know, there are people in prison who don't belong there. There's no question about it. Not everyone in prison is that bad. You understand that. And here's the worst part of it, Larry. Anyone listening to this show with one error could wind up in prison in this country. We all walk that line, and it's not a very easy line to walk. And it's only a matter of one mistake where we wind up in prison unless you're very, very wealthy and you can hire very good lawyers. It's as simple as that. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or Swiss America. So we had the bright light off the coast of California from their calling it a standard missile test. Do you believe that? I mean, okay, missile test. Everyone knows it was a missile test on a Trident submarine, an unarmed missile, you know, that was just a flashing light when the thing went up into the, I guess, the stratosphere. I don't know when the light lit up, but people were calling from as far away as the Bay Area, and Nevada, Colorado, Arizona, of the streak of bright light through the sky. People in Mexico were reporting this, and people got freaked out. And the only question to me is not was the Navy testing, but why did they test it so close to the California coast? Why would they do that? The Pacific Test Range runs way out into the ocean. And yes, I accept that it's the Navy's Third Fleet Strategic Systems conducting a scheduled Trident II D-5 missile test at sea from the USS Kentucky. I accept that. I don't think the conspiracy nonsense about it being China threatening us nonsense is true. But why would they test it so close to L.A., number one, and all the flights coming in and out of L.A.? Okay? And by the way, this is going to go on all week because of this activity, and there's more tests today. I think they just tested another one right now. And then the issue of the death penalty. Many people are calling on that. As usual, I lead the way with ideas and topics because I didn't talk about the presidential race. I find it absolutely stultifying, boring. Boring. I can't take it anymore. Have the election already. Get it over with. I can't do this for another year. I just wrote Government Zero. Why did I write Government Zero? To tell you what I think of the government, which is that we need a government. Not the government we have, but something entirely different. And that we're in great danger because of the Government Zero involved in this dance of death. When the real threat are the Islamo-fascists. Okay, I wrote that. But we are now seeing an administration that's going rogue, threatening China, threatening Russia, to the point that even Dianne Feinstein, a liberal Democrat, comes out and is shockingly rational and says that we should be in partnership with Russia against ISIS. And that sending 50 special forces troops to Syria is ludicrous. As far as I'm concerned, Obama sent them over as hostages. Not to do anything. Who sends 50 special forces into a war zone unless he hopes they're captured and they can be danced around by ISIS? I think even she sees the pattern, and it's not a very good one. At least that's one man's opinion. This is the Savage Nation. It's been wonderful being with you. God bless America, and thank you for buying Government Zero and making it such a big hit on the New York Times bestseller list with such amazing competition.